Taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the choice of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, peruse the website, learn more about the members, how you yourself can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get on code and learn their code of conduct, and get involved with the organization. And if you hover your mouse over that more tab, you see that drop-down box. You see that learning center. They got the drop-down box as well. Utilize those resources, resources that are designed to help you enhance your life. Once again, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website. Go ahead and open that other tab, type in www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Enigma September, and Shelby Davis, and all of the podcasts that we have right here on the Freedom Train Network. And we got a show dropping almost every day. So go ahead and do yourself a favor, something that can help you become cool and long-lasting in life. Once again, our website is www.freedomtrainradio.com. And they're right, Pat, if they go to that website and this type of podcast, that'd be cool, right?
Word. They will be.
Man, that's how you, beat somebody. Like, everybody wants a secret to life. All you got to do is listen to the podcast. Listen to our podcast, and you'll be somebody in life.
Word.
That's how Tony Dungy made it to the NFL Hall of Fame.
Word.
Hey, man.
Were we doing podcasts when he made it in?
Yes, Pat. We were podcasting for a minute.
I thought he made it in like years and years ago.
No, it wasn't that long ago.
How long ago was it? What was Tony Dungy? He was like 2010, wasn't he?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know, man. We've been podcasting for a long time. That's all I know.
We have been podcasting for a number of years. We have.
Yeah.
Before all these other people got on the scene, these other suckerfish trying to drink up all the water.
I was looking at, I was scrolling through social media the other day. I forgot which one. And one of the questions was, how long you been podcasting? And so I was scrolling through all the comments, and I seen 1 year. I think the longest I seen was 2 years, though, like 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, 8 months, things like that. So I was like, I've been podcasting since 2014. And Buddy was like, that's impressive. I like, I know who the shit.
I know it's impressive.
Right. We like what we do.
Now, we have been doing this shit for a long time, which is why, you know, when we say it's going to pop off, we know it's going to pop off because everybody else keep falling to the way, but we are still here.
Yeah, we still here.
Like Morpheus.
Yeah.
The Matrix. The second one. What is it, the third one? Whichever
hey,
one
man,
was,
so, dancing so I want to start off by saying happy birthday to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Happy birthday to you, Joe.
I'm getting me. I'm gonna talk about Dr. King first. You know I'm getting me. Come on, Pat. You think I'm not gonna get to me? But I want to talk about Dr. King first. I want to say happy birthday, Dr. Martin Luther King.
Join you.
There you go. He was the man. He made great contributions.
Pause.
And he deserves everything. He deserves all the gratitude and all the praise he gets. So thank you to Dr. King. We definitely stand on his shoulder. And I want to say happy birthday to myself, Joseph Arthur Ward, who was born on January 14, 1984, on a Saturday at 4:20 in the afternoon at Tallahassee Memorial Hospital. Right? Because my parents made love under a pecan tree And you see, either way, they got a net.
Word.
Yeah, y'all can use that one. You can use that. You got to charge me with my copyrights. But, yeah, man, first, I'm 36 years old, really going down. And you know how when you was young, you would think that being, because older people made it seem like being in your 30s and above was just, it just hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be thinking that, damn, when I get my mid-30s and 40s and 50s, I'm going to be hurting and shit. I ain't hurting shit. So I don't feel like I'm 36. I still feel like I'm in my 20s and stuff. Physically, my body, my mental's together. Man,
you
look
know,
here.
36 ain't old.
I know 36 ain't old, but the people made our elders made it seem like it was old.
Man, they just wanted to feel old.
Us not knowing that behind the scenes they were doing all that hunching. Trying to act like they old.
Ah,
we bring that. Think about it. They got all them kids.
We can bring but, the late 70s, early 70s, late 80s hunching back. 60s hunching.
Hey man, you know, with full bush afros on the vaginas.
Mm-hmm.
Get shaved.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need.
Mm-hmm. If God wanted fine. It to be bald, he wouldn't put no hair down there.
There you go, fool. You need a 1970 black exploitation bush down there. Hey, but man, so we got three topics, two mentions
Word.
That we're getting into today. And our two mentions, basically, we're going to kind of combine, but they split, but they kind of combine because it's similar things. So it's earthquakes happened recently in Puerto Rico and Iran, and I do mean earthquakes. So those are going to be our mentions. Then our topics, we're talking about the murder of Destiny Harrison. Because some foul shit went down with her murder, so we're going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about Dr. Claude Anderson's appearance on The Breakfast Club. And then we're going to talk about the Iran missile strike on the Ukrainian plane and how they're blaming it on the U.S. They say the U.S. is to blame for the Ukrainian plane being shot down. So that's what we talk about, along with talking about 1970 vaginal bushes. Ain't that right, Pat?
Vaginal bushes. You know, we could do a show on vagina bushes.
We should do a whole show on why vaginal bushes are necessary. So,
I agree.
But anywho, like I said, like I just mentioned, like, let me read this. Two earthquakes struck near a nuclear power plant in southwest Iran on Wednesday morning, just over a week after another earthquake hit the region. First earthquake measuring 9.4 magnitude struck just before 9 a.m. local time in the Bushehr Rabigh province, according to the United States Geological Survey. Around 30 minutes later, a second earthquake, this time measuring 4.5 magnitude, struck the same province, which runs along the Iranian coastline. The earthquake epicenters were within 20 kilometers of the city of Rosajan, a short distance from the country's Bushehr nuclear power plant. See how I pronounce that. Another earthquake measuring 5.1 magnitude struck the same region less than 2 weeks ago. In a dramatic day for Iran, two earthquakes happening just hours after the country fired a number of missiles at two Iraqi bases hosting U.S. troops in retaliation for U.S.'s killing of a top Iranian general last week. So, the earthquakes weren't small earthquakes, and they were back-to-back. So they did cause a lot of damage within the region. So that was Iran, and there were also earthquakes in Puerto Rico. My internet app is stupid. So, Pat.
What up?
What you know about the earthquake in Puerto Rico? My internet app is stupid. Let me got to put
it's
it
been
up
a week
somewhere.
In Puerto Rico. Baby, wait till I'm finito, because I'm... Yeah. You remember that song? From Cisco? Drew Hill?
I remember Cisco.
You don't remember Drew Hill?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I remember Drew Hill. Drew Hill Live.
Baby, can I get a hit of you? What's up? What's up? Come on. I like the fucker. Got
to
figure out if you're down because.
Hey, my me. Let me call
right,
you.
Right.
Yeah, how
right.
deep is your love for me? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah
me with
yeah,
it on.
Yeah,
you just.
Spend a week in Puerto Rico.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I got you. But anywho.
The whole joke. Anyway, so it was.
I messed it up.
It was a 5.9 earthquake in Puerto Rico that hit, and the affected areas was hit, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Caribbean, Netherlands, various other places in the area were hit. And that's really all I know about it. I know that Puerto Rico is still dealing with the aftermath of the storm that hit them a ways back, and they're still dealing with an immense debt issue and a whole bunch of infrastructure problems and everything else. So the last possible thing that they could use right now is an earthquake.
It's a damn earthquake.
Right.
Or a couple earthquakes. And so that's what's interesting about these earthquakes in both of these regions is the state of the regions based off of recent activities. And so when Iran, it's military activities. With Puerto Rico, it's natural disasters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, go ahead, my bad.
Say, and apparently, these earthquakes changed the landscape of of Puerto Rico to such an extent that you could see it in space. They got the cameras from space that show, you know, the change in the landscape from space. And guess what else it showed? It showed that
space.
The earth is round.
Yeah, flat earth is in your face. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's further destabilizing these areas where we have people who have, especially like in Iran, people who have nothing to do with these military and these political conflicts, they are victimized by this. And you know what's unfortunate, though, is the people who have the attitudes of, hey, well, you got to have winners and losers, who don't understand that a lot of people live in environments, they live in cultures that automatically create winners and losers. Because that's the culture that people choose to live. Not that it has to happen, but a culture that people choose to live in where winners and losers are created whether they want to be created or not. And so those who are on the bottom, who are the losers, are always going to suffer the worst. And that's what's most unfortunate about these earthquakes in these areas, to me.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me from the geological standpoint, and I get the social ramifications and the human factor, and those definitely can't be overstated. But the interesting part from what I was reading about the earthquake was that it's not happening along a fault line either. And that's, you know,
that's one thing I was thinking.
Yeah, that's really interesting because most people, you think earthquake, you think that shit only happens along a fault line, two tectonic plates rubbed together. But this isn't actually the case in this situation. That it says there's apparently a deformed zone near the upper crust where the quakes are hitting. So these aren't like tectonic quakes. These are actually like upper crust quakes where the ground is being reshaped for some reason that I don't understand, and I'm not going to pretend like I do because I haven't really read.
Mother Nature's mad.
Yeah, that could very well
everybody
be.
Everybody keep fucking the earth up. Mother Nature mad.
And so what we could be looking at too is if the landscape of Puerto Rico changes too drastically, of that the area changes too drastically, we could be looking at a place that's all of a sudden uninhabitable, extreme worst-case scenario, But we're definitely, even without that, we're looking at a place that's going to require millions to billions and billions more dollars to repair the infrastructure and rebuild a place. And Mother Nature, for some reason, she just keep taking her shit out on Puerto Rico. I feel bad.
I mean, well, the areas in the Caribbean, the greater and the lesser Antilles, they've suffered a lot lately with these hurricanes and these just natural disasters, period. A lot of the areas in the Caribbean and the greater and lesser Antilles just been getting smacked and smacked and smacked. Because it's like Hurricane Alley where the Caribbean is.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
And I do appreciate the correction because it is more than just Puerto Rico. It's that whole area. And apparently the United States Geological Services is saying that they need to be ready for more quakes. More earthquakes are expected. So,
what's interesting, too, is this year, even though it was the the Bahamas was hit, but this year, the hurricane activity wasn't as active as previous years. Matter of fact, this is one of the less active years that I can remember. Because usually we'll get two or three hurricanes. We'll be out of work at least once or twice or something like that. But it didn't really happen that this year. It happened like once. But outside of hurricane season, earthquakes are happening. So it's just something to keep an eye on that everybody has to keep an eye on because you know how when they and as you're talking about the landscape of Puerto Rico being reshaped. But you know how they show maps of the United States when sea levels have risen?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever recall seeing the Caribbean?
That's a good ass question. I don't recall seeing it, but it could have just been because I wasn't looking. But I don't recall seeing it. You're right.
And that's something we really need to go back and look at because one of the key things, that's why I asked that, is Miami is gone. Like all of South Florida is gone. Like it's up to Central Florida, like Orlando area. Orlando would be the new Miami if sea levels rose like those maps said. But in that, is there still a Caribbean on those maps? I don't know. Dun, dun, dun. Something to think about, people. Something to look up. But that's just food for thought, y'all. Those are mentions. You know, it's food for thought. Some of y'all, something for you all to chew on. Because thinking is good to exercise your brain and stuff like that. So we're going to get into our topics. Like I said, our three topics is, our first one is the murder of Destiny Harrison. The second is Dr. Claude Anderson's appearance on The Breakfast Club. And third is the Iranian strike of the Ukrainian airplanes. All right, so we start with the murder of Destiny Harrison. And as I read this the other day, you know me, I want to whoop some ass. You know what I'm saying? You feel me, Pat?
I feel you, dude.
So, let me just read it. In all reality, when I die, I want people to be like, she was a legend at that hair shit. And I want my daughter to be like, my mother was on top of that hair tip. I mean, my mother was on that hair tip, period. Said Destiny Harrison doing a selfie video shoot earlier this year. And so another tragic year in Baltimore comes to an end with an eminent legend of Destiny Harrison snuffed out at age 21 on 12/21. I don't like the snuffed out part in this article. But the article does give detail of what happened. I just don't like the snuffed out part. Harrison, the proud graduate of the Mergantler Vocational Technical High School, known as Mervo, in 2016, worked at Popeyes and Walmart, where she fine-tuned her extraordinary talent as a burgeoning master hairstylist. She went on to attend Bowie State University, where she majored in business administration with a minor in fashion design. Even a cursory examination of her social media footprint reveals her grind was relentless on her way to becoming a salon owner at the age of 18 while getting good grades at Bowie and still working part-time at Victoria's Secret at that. So during this time, Destiny launched her Madame D collection, an online venture offering a variety of hair products. By March of 2018, Harrison announced she was pregnant, and by mid-September, her beloved daughter, Dream, was born. 1 year after she announced her pregnancy in February 2019, Destiny opened Madame D Beauty Bar, her hair salon on North Milton Ave in East Baltimore. She had become so successful, she allegedly purchased a sparkling fire-engine red Mercedes-Benz. However, instead of being inspired by her talent and prodigious work ethic, there were those who were apparently consumed with jealousy and envy who lurked in the shadows to take advantage of the young mother and entrepreneur. 12 days before her murder, Harrison, the seemingly indefatigable, I didn't even know you could say that word like that, but I learned something new. Harris walked into her shop to discover two filthy, thieving rats, one male, one female, robbing her of thousands of dollars worth of hair bonds. According to the criminal report she filed, the male thief held her while the female punched her and stomped her, and they made off with her merchandise. I'm sure they picked the lock to the door, and I'm scared for my life and business, she wrote in the criminal complaint to the court commission. She already knew the assailants and named them in the document, but ultimately her fears were well-founded. On the evening of December 21st, individuals entered Destiny Salon on North Milton with customers inside, and most horrifically with her 1-year-old daughter present, shot her in the head. So that fuck boy that puts the whole shot her in the head. Although there were eyewitnesses to her murder, in Baltimore, still pervasive demonic stop snitching culture, nobody has come forth to identify her cowardly attack. Tragically, Destiny's murder is all too familiar narrative in our toxic, broken city, yada, 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 yada. But those are the details. So by the time she was like, got her stuff together, between 19 and 21, salon owner, she's furthered herself in her education. She's doing what she wanted to do, a young woman, doing what she wanted to do. And two bitches decide they want to rob her. And then after, I guess they got mad that they were named in the report, if those were the same people, come back and kill her in her shop in front of her child while customers are there. And then nobody has no information for the police. But everybody saw everything, but nobody has any information for the police. So as you're hearing this, me read this information, Pat, what are your thoughts as you're consuming this information?
Well, I had a couple. The first one was I really didn't like that article. I didn't like the tone or the characterization of those involved, period. But that's neither here nor there, and I know a lot of people are going to be like, really, nigga? Shut the fuck up. But you asked what my thoughts were. So those were some of my thoughts. Like, there's no need to characterize, or there's no need to lay things out in that manner. You're not showing her honor or respect by conducting the article or the writing in that way, you know, and that's just,
well, especially saying she got snuffed out, like that was just
right, right. Just the way all things were presented, the negative aspects of it, anyways. You can big up her without belittling or doing all of that other stuff, you know. So even not just to snuff them out or anything like that, but not just that. But also the, you know, calling people cowardly and calling people rats and this, that, and the third. I'm just against any sort of public displays of that nature against black people, especially in writing. And that's just from the standpoint of understanding how that stuff can be used against us. But moving forward, that doesn't mean I disagree with what was said. That just means I disagree with writing it publicly. It's a sad situation where even if she wasn't opening her own store and doing her own thing from the way it looks in social media, just the mere fact that somebody could walk into a place filled with people or with other people in there, shoot somebody, walk out, and nobody says anything. That has to be disturbing to everybody. And then, you know, what really comes to mind is people really got the G-code fucked up. The G-code used to be only for G's. It was only for people that were a part of that life. That's why it was called the G-code. This whole stop snitching shit, like, people that wasn't a part of that life, back in the days anyway, from what I understand, what I remember, it wasn't expected that people that weren't a part of that life wouldn't snitch. And it wasn't even called snitching.
Well, I mean, but see, people got snitching mixed up. If me and you rob somebody, right? I say me and you rob a store. And we getting away, or we think we got away, and I mess around to get caught, right? And I'd be like, I did it and Pat, and I give you up. If I give you up, that happens, and I give you up. That's snitching.
Right.
If right. I witness a crime, especially to somebody who I'm claiming to support or claiming to like, if I witness a crime in my area to somebody and I say something about it, that's called being a good citizen.
Right.
And people are bitches these days, and everybody who saw what happened with this young lady who claimed to support or love this young lady who was in there, in the shop at that time, all these things happened. All them people, some pussy hoes and fuck boys, all them people need to go to hell, man, because that's some bullshit.
Yeah.
But it ain't no honor in these streets no more. That's one of the issues. There ain't no real honor in these streets.
That's exactly what I was getting at when I said, you know, the G-code used to be for G's, and it used to be a real code to keep things respectable amongst people that was living that life and people that weren't. But even amongst people that were living that life and dealings with each other, that was a way that you went about doing things. And I'm not speaking on this from a perspective of somebody that's shot people and been a gangbanger and this, that, and the third, but I am speaking on it from the perspective of somebody that grew up in these types of communities. It used to be, you know, like you didn't even used to fight a motherfucker in front of their kid. You know what I'm saying? Like if you got your baby with you. And apparently, from what I understand, she had, you know, her daughter was in the shop with her. Her 1-year-old
right.
daughter was in the shop with her. If I know that that's your kid, I'm not going to do nothing to you in front of your kid. I'm going to catch you later.
And something similar to that, something similar to that happened here in Tallahassee, but they were able to arrest the guy because, you know, people did what they were supposed to do. And the guy wasn't that smart, but at one of the barbershops, he shot the dude in front of his son and even held the gun to the son's head.
That go back to exactly what you said. It ain't no honor in these streets, man.
Right.
Like, what kind of weak-ass individual do you got to be to shoot somebody in front of their kid, or in the case you're talking about, to put your gun to a kid's head?
But in that particular situation and in this situation, it's like the totality of the bitch assness. So you are jealous because the young lady is successful. She grinds her ass off to get to where she goes, and her reward is, well, not really, because it's not really her reward, but one of the, and I don't even want to call it consequences, but one of the things that happens is she gets murdered because people are jealous of what she are. But you mad that she said something about you still in bundles? Like, you still in the bundles of hair to become rich.
This is where I go back to, though, like, and see, I'm just going to interrupt you because that article said that they were jealous, but we really don't know why.
I do get what you're saying, but you got to have some kind of jealousy, fuck boy, pussy hoe streak inside you for to even contemplate doing anything like this, though. That's just, I guess that's where I'm coming from with.
No, I get you, especially from the standpoint of killing a woman in her shop, in front of her customers and her child. There's something, either she did something extremely fucked up or you just a hoe. I get that. My whole thing is, and that was one of the reasons why I said I didn't really like care for the way the article was written. If we don't know who did it, because they ain't, the community ain't saying nothing, and if we want to blast people, blast the motherfucking community, definitely. But if we don't know who did it, then we don't know why they did it. So them inserting that narrative of jealousy in there.
From all the information that I've seen, they know, the community knows who did it. They're just not saying nothing.
Right. Well, that, I'm saying we don't know because we're not.
Right. Yeah. We particularly don't know. But you know, there is a particular motive and all these things behind it.
Right.
But you know, but even think about it though. You walk into your place of business and you see people robbing. You know, that right there is major violation by itself. But then it's just, you know, the tragic outcome of this is this didn't have to happen. Whoever did this, some bitches. And if people seeing this and not saying nothing, it makes it worse.
Right. And it's not even just about Baltimore at that point. It's about the entire community of black folk. You know, we're already, we've been, and I blame hip-hop too. You know, I got a lot of blame to go around when it comes to this, in terms of, especially the way it's being handled in the aftermath. If this is somebody that's truly beloved in your community, somebody who was doing, like, she ain't have no friends. She, like, ain't none of y'all customers was ever like, you know, like, I really appreciate the service she offers. Nobody cares about her kids.
I think that just shows the depth of the bitch assness that is within people. Like, just because somebody is smiling in your face doesn't mean they wish you the best. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
And this is a great, grand example of that. Just because people are in your corner doesn't mean that they wish you the best. Just because somebody's around you doesn't mean that they wish you the best. And that doesn't mean you be the no new friends type of people, but that means you be careful about who you have around you.
And you need
to understand who you have around you, be able to feel and read people, energies, all these other things. If you don't feel right, don't do it. Don't second guess. If you got to think twice about it, something there.
Well, you shouldn't be the no new friend type of person anyways, because old friends will fuck you up just as much as the new one will. Sometimes even more so, because they have more access to opportunity to fuck you over. But, I mean, there's just so much blame to go around. Like I said, I blame the hip-hop community because a lot of them little assholes glorify life they don't understand, don't know nothing about. And then you got people misinterpreting the rules and misinterpreting the way things was going originally. And then you have dumb shit like this happening. I blame the police. When this lady first filed the goddamn police report, there should have been somebody positioned at her store, or at least in the vicinity, consistently, until everything was pressed through, until the trial happened, until these people were taken off the streets. The culture of the environment. We're constantly hearing about negative shit happening in Baltimore. We're constantly hearing about that. So if we're constantly hearing about it on the outside, I know the police department is hearing about the shit. If you got a woman that's brave enough to file a report and stand in and say, yeah, this happened and these are the people that did it, then you at least need to spare the manpower to make sure that she's safe.
Right, but to me, and I do agree, but I think a lot of that goes to a lot of the fucked up culture in these cities that we live in, these communities, these neighborhoods. But also, to me, a part of that too goes into people not giving them, you know, also, and this may not be, I don't know what percentage of this is, but also people just not giving a fuck about black women either. No, black people, black women. That couple. Then you go to the. That's the police angle.
No, I agree with that.
I mean, but now, in saying that, I just had another thought. Clearly, nobody gives a fuck about black women like that. Not even black women in some cases. Some black women, right? Because if so, people would have came forward, and these people would have been arrested, or even, like you're saying, it would have been more protection for her to ensure her safety.
Well, one of the things we got to understand is we view each other the same way that they do. You know, we so nobody cares about black people. Black people especially. Nobody cares about black women. Black people especially. Black women especially. You know, we've had these conversations before, not to put too much private business out there in the streets, but we have these conversations offline all the time with both other men and women. So it ain't just like it's me and Joe talking.
But, man, look, man, you got to be crazy in your mind if you think a total society can buy into an idea, but as the total society is buying into the idea, a section of society is not buying into it. But the actions is consistently happening across the society. So, and that doesn't mean every single individual is doing this, but that means that every single individual has brought into it to a point to where it's still able to happen. And yeah, you have those who are resisting against it, but those people are still in the minority of those who are the great majority who are. Because you turn the blind eye, you're still a part of it. So let's not act like we're in a society to where people really give a shit about black women. Let's not act that like that.
And that's what I was, you know, getting to is when you understand culture and you understand how culture works, you understand that if the dominant society don't give a shit about black people, then black people within that dominant society also more than likely don't give a shit about black people. So, but what you have with stories like this is a deepening of the stereotype, you know, a worsening of the stereotypes where there are a lot of people out there who don't try to help black people because they don't believe that black people want help. And stories like this accentuate that. Now, I am from the school of thought that black people need to help themselves, but that don't mean that black people need to throw up hurdles to outside resources unnecessarily.
Yes, black people need to help themselves, but we also live in a society to where we contribute to where resources are available for us. So I'd be damned if we just going to say, well, even though we contribute to these resources being available, we're just not going to try to access these resources. We're going to try to access these resources, but we're going to also take care of ourselves. So we're going to make sure that we don't just rely on this, but we're going to access these goddamn resources. Why? Because we contribute to these goddamn resources being here.
So, and I agree with that. It's frustrating. Immensely so. But, you know, when you understand the culture, and that's part of the reason why I said I blame hip-hop, you know, because hip-hop does a lot of propagating of these false narratives. They and it's one of them things, like you said earlier, culture affects everybody differently because everybody, you know, you're affected by several different cultures. You're affected by the social or the cultural alignment of the friends you have, the family you have, the community, the neighborhood you grew up in, the city, in the larger overall ethnic community. So all of these things interplay differently, but the fact of the matter is everybody within a group, regardless of whatever subgroups of that group they belong to, are still affected in some way by the larger, more dominantly present narrative. And so when you have something like hip-hop, not to make this a hip-hop discussion, but I know a lot of people are going to be like, why the fuck can he say hip-hop? That's why I keep going back to it. When you have a larger group, a larger, more powerful, more vocal piece of a culture constantly accentuating incorrect narratives such as don't snitch, black folk don't snitch, if you tell, if you talk, you a snitch, this, that, and the third, then that makes things like this more readily, more apt to happen. They're more likely to happen. and everybody's going to be different, but everybody's still influenced the same. And it's always going to be a pain to push through those narratives and do the right thing, because you're going to feel like you're going against the stream. And so we got now, all of these different issues. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So, got a question.
What's up?
So I'm going to be the devil's advocate, but I'm going to ask these questions. Because when you say hip-hop, are we talking about the artist, or are we talking about the people who really control it, or are we talking about a combination of both?
I'm talking about both, because I understand, and I'm not even talking about hip-hop, because hip-hop is a larger culture. I'm talking about rap specifically, because, you know, rap is a piece of hip-hop. Rap is not hip-hop. It's a piece of it. But I'm talking about rap, and I'm talking about the execs and the artists, because on the one hand, I understand the execs control who has access to the resources available for a rap act. I get it. But on the other hand, if you didn't have rap acts willing to sell out in order to get access to them resources, then they wouldn't have the resources that they have. So there's a level of complicity to everything. They dominate because they're willing to find people willing to capitulate and produce what they want produced. And then they flood the market with this shit, and people are programmed to like it. If nobody would capitulate, they wouldn't have anything to flood into the market.
Well, I think it's a cycle, though.
It is.
I think it's a cycle, but the cycle has to be acknowledged, because, yes, artists are agreeing to do this dumb shit. You got a lot of artists agreeing to do this dumb shit, yes. But a lot of these artists who are agreeing to do this dumb shit are being taken advantage of, because they fucked up and come from nothing when they get there. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to agree to this shit, but I do want to acknowledge cycle.
I agree.
They are agreeing, but at the same time, that pressure being put on them, and a lot of them not that bright, and they're being intellectually taken advantage of, too, and manipulated.
No, that's a great
point. But they are agreeing.
That's a great point, and it is a point. I'm not trying to say that it's equal 50-50 blame. I'm not saying that at all.
No, I get it. I just want to make sure that is that's said and that's put out
so people
won't take this and assume.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. The blame is not 50-50. That's why I said I think there's a little bit to go to both sides, meaning the artists get a little bit of the blame. But the major label executives, and even to a third point, the consumers, the black consumers, get a large chunk of the blame. Because if this music was only selling to white people,
the black consumers don't want to take none of the blame. But I try to tell people all the time, you got to look at the consumers, because the consumers have way more power than they agree. But now, we went left.
We did.
We did all that to scrutinize the Stop Snitching culture with this Destiny Harrison.
Yeah, that shit is stupid, man. Knock that shit off. Because you are not snitching. Like Joe said, you are not snitching if you're an innocent bystander telling the authorities what happened. And you know what,
you've been a fucking good citizen.
For all of the black folk that would be like, well, I'd rather see them go free than see them, you know, see the police up in here. Look. I disagree.
You shouldn't fucking kill somebody. You shouldn't
right.
kill somebody.
Right.
You chose to violate your own community member. You chose to murder your own community member. Now we're gonna let the white folk deal with you. You made that
right.
choice.
So the only way this would be okay, in my opinion, is if somebody from Baltimore was taking care of the situation and they just didn't want to give the police the opportunity to whatever. Now I'm not a fan of vigilante justice, but I could see that as the community kind of taking care of its own issue. That's cool. But what cannot happen is for y'all not to talk to the police and not to do nothing. That
right.
cannot happen. So, yeah, this Stop Snitching shit is stupid. It is stupid. And I dare somebody to do some shit in front of me. I'm like your little brother. I'm telling.
Hey, look. You already know. I tell my homeboy straight up. I tell everybody around me straight up, look, if you doing what you're supposed to do, I got your back. You're doing stupid shit. You know, y'all.
Right.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna compromise myself for your dumb shit anyway.
Right. So, week before last, or maybe week before that, Dr. Claude Anderson was on the Breakfast Club. So for those who don't know Dr. Claude Anderson, he's the author of books. He has several books, but two of his most notable books are Black Labor, White Wealth, and Power Numbers. So Dr. Claude Anderson has spent a lot of time in politics, working in economics. And for the last 40 years, he's been talking about economic plans to help Black America build its own wealth from within and become an economic powerhouse within America. Dr. King, even a whole other host of people, and everybody knows that if black America aggregates its wealth and uses it as one, Black America would be one of the top 15 to 20 richest nations in the world. So Dr. Claude Anderson, like I said, for the longest has been putting out messages and speeches and teaching people in books on how we can become that if we really wanted to. But apparently, Black people are not really listening. So Pat and I are, we enjoy Dr. Anderson's message. And I'm happy he was on the Breakfast Club because his message needs to be out right now. His message needs to be out on mainstream, like mainstream Black people, but it needs to be out right now, especially amid this ADOS foundational Black America stuff. Right, because let's just be real, Pat. They're taking what Dr. Claude Anderson was talking about in the 70s and just kind of putting their own little spices on it. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of elements of what Dr. Claude Anderson has been saying in their movement, but they're definitely spicing it up with their own flavor.
Right. Well, especially now with the reparations, because Dr. Claude Anderson has been talking about what we can do for reparations.
Yeah, he's
but
been
now,
actively fighting for reparations for a number
right,
of decades.
Right. They've either, I know people have been able to take some of his books and go to Switzerland and be able to kind of make appeals for reparations, but Dr. Claude Anderson, he's a historian, he talks about economics, all these things. He has great information. And what's great about his information is it's tried-tested information. It's information based off of practical application. It's information based off of the experience that he got from practical application. It's not just theory. It's actual practice. And he got a chance to take that information on to the Breakfast Club. And If you have been listening to Dr. Claude Anderson's message, you don't necessarily need to watch the Breakfast Club to see what he was saying. But if you wanted to know specifically what he was saying in that specific interview, then you would need to watch it. But just overall, his message didn't change. He went on the Breakfast Club and talked about what he'd been talking about for the last 40 years. He went on the Breakfast Club and talked about what's in his books. So if you've been reading the books and you've been listening to him, you know what he was talking about. But it's interesting that he was on there with the Breakfast Club so more people can see him. So, Pat, what do you like about Dr. Claude Anderson's message and information that he's been giving over the years, and why do you think it was important for that message to be on that platform?
Dr. Anderson is one of those guys. He's one of those elder statesmen. He's been saying the same thing for 40 years. And I think that's one of the things I really like about his message, is the consistency of it. Because it reminds us that no matter how much we think things are changing, we still got the same problems, and they can still be solved the same way. And I think that's a staunch reminder. Now, you know, you can make a lot of other arguments about the need to add new information into your argument, But the fact remains, Dr. Claude Anderson has one of the strongest arguments for black behavior and black reparations that we've seen in modern history. And
right.
the fact that after 30, 40 years, there hasn't been a need to incorporate new information shows us
right.
just how little progress is actually
we've
being
made. Well, that's, and not to cut you off, that's one of the things I love about his messages. Because people always ask him about the progress black people have made, and he always says we have made little progress. He acknowledges that some things have happened, because you'll be a fool to say nothing, period, has happened. But a lot of progress?
Yeah.
Ain't that much progress has happened, not for black people as a whole.
Stuff happening and progress are two separate things. Like if your goal is to write a book, and during the time you're supposed to be writing a book, you decide to brush your teeth and masturbate. Stuff happens.
Stuff is happening.
But did you make progress?
Right.
So, and I think that's a distinct. There are a lot of distinctions about progress that need to be made, including progress for whom. Something that I talk about quite frequently, and in my book coming out later on.
He talks about that as well.
I talk about Dr. Claude Anderson talks about it too. So, but. The importance of him being on a platform like that, I think it's important to expose people to the information. The problem we have nowadays isn't necessarily an issue I have with that particular platform, but it's the problem I have with people. And that is that when you get a message like Dr. Anderson's message, the intention is to spur you into action.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the Breakfast Club audience is going to be spurred into action. Now, there's a lot to be said about exposure to information, planting the seed. I get all that. But at the end of the day, if people aren't spurred into action, then I question whether or not there was any progress made on that show or whether there was just, you know.
Well, I do get the angle where you're coming from, but I think if you do ask that, then you're expecting too much from that show.
Well, I would agree, which is why I kept saying that show, because I do think there are other shows where if he delivered the message, people would move into action. But that show with that audience, like I said, the exposure I agree with, great exposure. He needs the exposure, and black people need to hear his message. But for me, I'm looking for people to be riled up and to go do something intelligent.
Well, going in with the understanding that this is also a platform where a Tekashi 6ix9ine will get more views than a Claude Anderson because of the coaching structure of the platform. It wasn't created to inspire people in that way. Is to create to inspire people in other ways, but not in that way.
Right.
So it's an entertainment show, but for the magnitude and the size of that platform and the people that it reaches to have Dr. Claude, because you know they've had Dick Gregory, Umar Johnson, all these other people. I thought Dr. Claude Anderson was somebody that they definitely needed on there for a realistic conversation about black economics. Somebody who's not going to say things to make black people feel good. He's not trying to pacify nothing. He told you, they asked him about Obama. He's like, Obama was a joke. It's good for me personally to just have a straight shooter, somebody who shoots straight from the hip, going up there saying, hey, this is what it is. You want to know how I know what it is? Because I've been studying and doing this shit forever. So this is what it is. This is where we are. This is where we keep claiming that we are. We ain't there. We right here, and we got a long way to go, and time is fucking running out.
I agree. Well, all of the prominent leaders have been saying it. Now, they've all had different messages, but they've all been saying it. Dr. Claude Anderson's message resonates so well, especially nowadays, because it's economics focused, and everybody is in love with money right now.
Right.
So, and that's another thing that I like about him is that he's able to translate the struggle in economic terms. The only other person I've seen with the ability to do that on the level that he does is not here anymore, and I'm talking about Dr. Amos Wilson. who, you know, back in the 70s and 80s was telling people to get involved in bottled water. Obviously, we did not take his advice. But Dr. Claude Anderson is a force. And for those of us that know him and have been following him over the decades, I know I've been following him and known of him for more than 10 years. I'm not going to say it's been a whole lot more than 10 years. But it's been more than 10 years. The dude, the consistency of his message, that alone is impressive. I've seen him give speeches everywhere. And he gives the exact same speech. And no matter how many times you hear it, it's still powerful. It's still like God. And I think a lot of that, too, is because, like you said, it runs so counter to the narrative. He's a straight shooter, and all you keep hearing about is progress, progress, progress. And this dude, right, for the last 30, 40 years.
But like, nah. Ain't no progress. We've been looking like progress. But, you know, going into perspective, black progress versus white progress, and then something that they got into is, you know, like we've also said on the show, just because you become the first black in a white environment doesn't mean that's progress for black people. Case in point, Barack Obama becoming the first black president in America, but the conditions of black America as a whole, the citizens, getting worse. Yep. And not saying that Obama himself was working to make stuff worse, but what it shows is just because a black man becomes president doesn't mean that everything's just going to end, like white supremacy is ended. We see what white supremacy is now, right? We see the conditions of black people where it is now. Like, we're really looking at some of these things. Now, a whole lot of people still got illusions of grandeur about things that happened with Obama, but that's just one example of just because him being president didn't mean black people made it. That just meant he's president. But guess what? Black people overall still ain't doing good, and it's getting worse.
I think even to that, because, you know, I'm big on black progress versus white progress. Actually, one of my next books is going to be about that, because I've been studying it for a while. And one of the things that I've come to grips with is, first off, being the first black typically, usually means absolutely nothing for black people. Usually. The vast majority of the cases, it means absolutely nothing. It basically means you were the first black person that they let in. But it doesn't mean you were the first black person that was capable. And more often than not, a lot of these black people don't really open doors. Now, we make a lot of these superficial symbolic arguments where, you know, you say, well, if it wasn't for this person, then nobody would have even been looking out for you. Or if it wasn't for this person breaking through the glass ceiling, then you might not have gotten your opportunity. And all of those symbolic arguments are cute. But when you really look at what this person did, did they really do anything specifically for black people? And if the answer to that question is no, especially if you're talking about somebody in a high-powered position, like president of the United States, if you aren't actively working for black people,
he chose to ignore black people.
Right. Then I can't say that. Then, in my opinion, you're actively working against black people.
And I know that's a hard stance to take,
but that's the stance I take with high-powered positions.
Well, because, you know, there aren't a lot of Maxine Waters out there. So, there have been black people who've been in positions who really fought. But one of the problems with them is they were the only one.
Right.
So you were... You're a great white shark who by yourself against a whole sea of other great white sharks. And you're yelling and they're yelling. You're not going to be heard. And that was one of the issues with black people being in these positions. There are some who did try to make strides, but they were the only ones. Now, I believe that those people are not in abundance. Now, that don't mean it's a handful of them. I believe there's more throughout the history, but I believe there were more sellouts than actual black people who have been put in these positions and actually help other black people. But and if you tell me, if you disagree, I just say, well, look at our conditions. Look at where we are. Look, we're still having black first in a lot of things. Look at where we are. Look at where we are in these white societies. Look at where we are in our own societies. We don't have anything. What do we have that we can claim as our own?
I don't think it's possible to reasonably look at the history and to disagree with what you said. I just don't think that that's possible, because the fact of the matter is, like you said, we don't have anything. I mean, Barack Obama, and I don't think Barack Obama was a bad president. I actually think Barack Obama was one of the better presidents that we've ever had. I'm not going to say the absolute best, but he was definitely one of the better presidents that we've had in terms of...
I say this. I judge him on two. We give him grades on two scales, right? So for black people, he failed. But as just president of the United States, he had like a B plus.
Yeah, he was one of the better presidents we have. But the fact of the matter is, he spoke about black situations less than the white presidents that preceded him. He took meetings with powerful black people less than the white presidents that he's surrounded by. So. You put all that in perspective, and it was almost like, because he was black, biracial, whatever you want to call him, because I know some people definitely have issues with calling him black, but because he was not white, he was insulated from a lot of the racial pressures that other white people, white presidents have had to deal with. You would think that and then that's when you get back into the symbolic argument. Well, he did enough for us just by becoming president. Bullshit.
No, that's bull. If you see, those are the people who shouldn't be able to vote. And that's the stuff that Dr. Claude Anderson be talking about. I'm talking about people doing foolish stuff and not understanding what's going on. And then it goes into what Neely Fuller Jr. was saying. If you don't understand the system of white supremacy, what it is and how it affects everything else you seek to understand will only confuse you. So you think that just because he's president, that's a victory. That's not a fucking victory. So you voted for somebody to do something, and they didn't do it, and you cool with it. Okay. Because we're supposed to vote for people to do nothing but just be visible symbols, nothing more. All right.
So, but one of the other things about Claude Anderson is that he has been in a lot of powerful positions before, and you check his record, he's fought for black people in those positions.
Right.
So,
he was the lone great white.
Right. So we do need more people engaged, and that just hasn't happened, because usually to get in those positions, you got to break through the culture wall. And that culture wall has stripped plenty of black people of their teeth and their will to fight. They make it on the other side, but they make it on the other side, a shell of what they were when they started. And that's something that we as black people have to acknowledge as well. We, especially when we're talking to these young kids, and you know, something Joe talks about on The Fix all the time is how people pin all their hopes on the kids, and they apply so much of pressure to these kids, you know, that it creates an untenable scenario for them, where for them it becomes a lose-lose. But they're forced through this wall with no cultural support, no cultural backing, no place to go get a cultural recharge. And then we look at them funny when they basically turn out to be melanated white people.
Okay.
You know, or black people without a spine, of which there are far too many. So, Dr. Claude Anderson is definitely one of those great whites out there. I understand the argument about different audiences for different shows, and it's a very good argument. But for me, and that's what I kept saying, for me personally, would I go on the Breakfast Club? Sure, if I had something to sell. Or if I had something that I wanted to get out and I just needed more people to be aware of it. Would I go on the Breakfast Club if I was trying to inspire change or to spark people to do something different? No. Because their audience isn't geared for that.
Well, the majority of that audience isn't built for that. You're correct. But, you know, from what I've seen, the Breakfast Club is a part of the radio run that people go on. So they do Breakfast Club, Sway in the Morning, the show with Angie Martinez, the show with Ebro and Rosenberg. And so it'd be part of, so you're going to get the different shows that have different outlets with different objectives and things. But
the funny thing is with what you just said, and I know the Breakfast Club, iHeartRadio, or whoever it is that owns them, they kind of sold everything else and pumped everything they had into the Breakfast Club, which is why they seemingly just popped up out of nowhere. But out of all of those shows you just mentioned, I'd say the Breakfast Club's audience is probably the most looking for entertainment-only audience out of all of those. Now, I can't speak to the Angie Martinez show. I've never listened to her show, and I don't know much about her audience. But I do know Sway. His audience, he has a large section of his audience that's about that action. And I do know Ebro is similar.
Sway is a different type of cat, though. Sway come at things differently than the Breakfast Club. So, you know, I wish Dr. Anderson would have been able to get on Sway in the morning as well. But I just believe Dr. Anderson's message needs to be heard.
I agree.
And
especially if I'm looking at it from his legacy point of view, I agree.
And think about the person who's probably never seen or heard of Dr. Anderson before, but was looking for some information similar, but ran across this. They so happened to watch The Breakfast Club, and they ran across him. And now they get to be put on him. And, you know, some of the young cats, some of these older people, some people like that, but also just the rawness in his message and how he's getting it to me, I felt like it needed to be there at this point in time. We need some real shit to smack us in the face for us to realize that it's real out here. This white supremacy stuff is real. He broke down what race is. Like, because everybody acting like they don't understand, or they do understand what race is, not understanding that it's a competition between groups for resources and land. Broke that down. So I just thought that was amazing. So.
Well, we need him to break down racism because a lot of people don't understand what that is.
So, but, all right. So,
yeah.
Our last topic, and Pat gonna take the lead on this, is the Ukrainian airplane being shot down by the Iranian missiles. What the hell happened?
Basically, so the U.S. killed the General Soleimani. We all know about that. We talked about it last show. Well, later on, over the next few hours, or maybe it was the next few days, especially after Iran, this happened after Iran responded with the retaliatory strikes on the U.S. airbases in Iraq. They were on high alert for a U.S. response. And so, from what I understand, one of the high-ranking generals told his personnel to shoot at any U.S. or perceived enemy plane in the area. Don't try to get permission from your superiors. Shoot it down. And so this plane took off. There was no confirmation gathered for it. There was no trying to figure out what was going on. And it got shot down. And I believe it was 179 people died. You know, and these were people from all over the world. You know, a good, you know, dozens of them were Iranians themselves, which is why the Iranian people are up in arms, because there were dozens of Iranians on there. There were dozens. I think there were
176 people. Yeah,
there were 50 some people from Canada on there, which is why Canada is up in arms. So there were people from all over the world on the plane. So the administration at first lied about it for a couple days. They said, we didn't do it. It must have been a malfunction. It must have been an error. There's some debate as to whether or not the people lying actually knew and were just trying to cover up. But eventually they admitted to it. Eventually they were like, yes, we did this. It was an accident. The general over the forces has come out and made a statement to the Iranian parliament and has also made a publicized statement on public television, state television over there in Iran, and basically has owned up to it, called it the most embarrassing moment of his life. The government has said he will be dealt with. He will face the Iranian justice system. Everybody is pretty much making calls for this situation to be dealt with. And it puts everything back on edge. But this also plays differently because there are a couple other things. So I'm going to get into two of them. One of which is that one of the things that Iran has always kind of used in their own government and their own population against the United States is the fact that in 1988, the United States killed hundreds of Iranians when they shot down a civilian Iranian plane filled with 288 people. This is in 1988. And that's been something they've always kind of used, even in public interviews, international interviews with other people. The regime that's in charge, which has been in charge since then, has always said, who shoots down a civilian airliner filled with planes, filled with civilians? The United States does. So now they've done it. So that's one angle that I do think is having an impact on the psychology of what's going on in Iran and on the decisions that the world is making. The other angle is that the Iran nuclear deal, which the United States pulled out of shortly after Trump became president, and which has basically been falling apart ever since the U.S. pulled out of, and I did a show on that, so you can go check Lessons from the Screen.
You said pulled out.
I did. Ever since the United States, well, we know Trump know how to pull out. But ever since, you know, we left the deal, Iran has been doing things to kind of try to provoke people to get back into the deal and to try to alleviate the pressure that was put on by the continued sanctions. Well, since this has happened, the rest of the world has kind of hardened its stance against Iran. And it's real interesting that it happened days after the world was kind of leaning towards being on Iran's side following the assassination of General Soleimani. So there are a lot of different things at play here. I view all of this as fallout from the death of General Soleimani, because if he hadn't been killed, there wouldn't have been a high alert status. The plane wouldn't have been shot down. So all of this, in my opinion, is more fallout from the killing of a man that was supposed to make everything safer. So it's real interesting, and it's going to continue to get interesting because, you know, Donald Trump is back on his high horse talking shit again, talking cash again. Now that everybody's kind of looking at Iran like, what the fuck? But one of the interesting things that I will say that Iran has done is that they've owned it, they've admitted they made a mistake, and that they have accepted the responsibility, and they have even allowed other investigators, even American investigators, they have said it would be okay for other nations to send investigators in to investigate what happened. That is a big step in the right direction. It doesn't excuse anything. But it is a big step in the right direction. Now, I'll say this one last thing before I shut up. The protests that are going on over there, a lot of people, especially the ones that have started up recently, I spoke about the 1988 incident that has constantly been blared in their heads. I also am of the mind that the United States wants regime change in Iran. And I'm not saying it's happening, but what I am saying is, it's not outside the realm of possibility that the United States has people over there stirring shit up.
Man, look. Ain't that what the United States do?
I mean, it is, but a lot of people
don't believe that. The United States it'd be hard-pressed not to believe that, especially with the United States having an extensive history. Now, we're not saying we could prove it, but we're not saying that it's not happening because, once again, the United States have an extensive history of doing stuff like that to go over there and stir trouble up so they can get in who they want to get in. This person they will be able to manipulate and bam, bada boom, bada bing, bam, get what they want, right?
Right.
That's what COINTELPRO.
Especially in the Middle East and Central and South America, but especially
COINTELPRO real. Right. It's real. It ain't just for black people. Right. So, I mean, yeah, so 176 people are killed on this plane. They are taking, they are saying they did it, but, you know, they're saying it's the U.S.'s fault because we're on high alert because of what happened with the U.S. or what's going on with us in the U.S.
Right. Now, there is a lot of truth to that, but then also, you know, the other point that has been made repeatedly is if y'all were on high alert, you should have closed down your airports. You should have made it so that the only thing in the sky would be military, and you could feel free to shoot it down. You can't go on high alert, tell your operators to shoot down anything in the sky, and then
don't set shit down.
Right, and then clear planes to take off from the airport. I mean, the plane took off at 6:12. It was shot down at 6:14.
Yeah, that's... So do you think any foul play? You think it was meant to be shot down? Because that's sudden. And I could be wrong, but it's almost as if they knew this specific plane was going to be taking off for it to get shot down, like, within 2 minutes.
I wouldn't rule that out either, because just like America is capable of doing some nefarious, gnarly shit, the Iranian government is capable of doing some nefarious, gnarly shit. I don't see the benefit of it from a strategic standpoint for them to shoot down their own plane and then for the series of events to unfold the way it has. If it had unfolded differently, I could see a strategic... But this was at this point in time, with everything that Iran had going for them on the international stage, especially after the United States had assassinated General Qasem Soleimani, and you had members of the UN and various other European countries saying that the United States had committed an international crime by assassinating this guy. They had all of these things going in their favor, not to mention most people in the world, a lot of the world leaders don't fucking like Donald Trump. They don't like the U.S.
Right. Right,
they had everything going in their favor, and then this happened. I tend to believe either it was a real live mistake or there was some foul play, but it wasn't necessarily on their end.
Because I'm just thinking, with it being a mistake, like, was it somebody sitting on a desk and accidentally hit a button? I mean, somebody said, "Ooh, a plane is in there. Let's shoot." Because, you know, you've been on the plane. You've been on an airplane. 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That ain't enough time to be scared yet.
But a plane only got about 8,000 feet from the airport before
right.
It was shot down. So what I do think happened, if we want to say it was a mistake, the plane was taking off from Tehran, the capital.
Tehran. Right.
Tehran, the capital.
You
of
said
Iran.
Say it the regular way. Say it over that way. Tehran. Tehran.
The plane was taken off from the capital of Iran. You know that there's a military presence there. So what I think happened, it got shot down by missile. What I think happened was somebody saw a blip on the radar, and they pressed the button. Now, that might not be what actually happened, but also when you take people that aren't necessarily trained, and I don't give a fuck what you say, you aren't trained to be at war, okay? There's no amount of training that can prepare you to be at war, all right? So when you go into a place and your commanding officer says, we're at high alert, you see something in the sky, shoot it down. Your executive functions start to diminish immediately because you've just been put in stress mode. Fight or flight response kicks in. And I think if it was an accident, I could see it being an accident where somebody is looking at a blip on the screen and they're like, oh, shit, I got to press this motherfucking button. You know, even if it was shot down from a shoulder-fired ground-to-air missile, RPG of some sort. If depending on how far away they are, you could even still make the case. The only way the case becomes weak is if you have somebody that's trained, that's looking at the plane, and that actually saw it take off. If you actually saw this motherfucker take off from your airport and you still shot it the fuck down, that's not accidental.
Right. Right. Because, yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, it sounds, I could be wrong, but everything don't sound right to me.
Yeah, some things do sound off. 2 minutes sounds off. You know, the fact that there was anything even in range to hit the plane 2 minutes after takeoff. But again, it's the capital, so you know there's a military presence there. The timing even of everything to go down and the way it went down, you know, like this is a nation that, again, has been holding the fact that the U.S. did it in 1988 over their heads for the last few decades. And all of a sudden, the same thing happens to them. A few days after, the entire world falls on their side and starts criticizing the United States. There's a lot about this story that just doesn't fucking add up. But that's the story we got.
Right.
I don't know. What you think?
Man, look, I ain't saying you wrong. That ain't what I'm saying. But, I mean, it just, you know, it's just me, man. I just believe that in this we just need to ask a whole lot of questions.
I agree.
And not just go with the stories that are on the news and all these different things here. So.
Yeah, it's weird. And then the other thing is the protest and all of that other stuff. Like I said, I do think, and I'm not saying it is, but I personally do think the United States has people over there stirring shit up. The people are already stirred up because the sanctions that the United States put on are affecting the population. And fuck all that bullshit about we can sanction a country without having it affect the people. That's bullshit. That's the same bullshit they tried to tell us about Venezuela. We're only sanctioning high-level officials. Motherfucker, you sanctioning the country. I don't give a fuck who name you put on it. It's affecting the people. So the sanctions that they're under right now are so severe that the people are rising up and they're demanding relief. And then you go back to the United States is seeking a policy of regime change. They want new people in policy, in power. And that's the only real thing that all of this mayhem serves to progress. If you want somebody else in power in Iran, all of this shit is brilliant. And that's why I keep saying I honestly think the U.S. has people over there stirring shit up. It's the only thing that really makes sense to me when you look at all of the pieces together. You got actors, you got stuff happening outside the country, and you got people inside the country making stuff happen inside of it.
Look, it don't sound good. It sounds like there's a whole lot of fishy stuff going on. That's what I'm keep saying. That's why I keep asking these questions. That's why the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, that don't sound.
Yeah, the timing of everything is just off.
Yeah. So it's almost as if, because you know also too that in history, we've seen war instigators play both sides, or people who benefit from war, especially financially, play both sides to get the conflict to happen so they can make money. Because if the conflict is happening, they're going to be in business.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a possibility as well. It sounds like it's more to it than just some accident. So.
I would agree.
Yeah. Hey, man. It's our second or third show of the 2020.
Yep.
This is our third show of the 2020. Oh. Going down. So I remember, man, it's my birthday, so show me some love. I appreciate everybody who showed me love so far. and, you know, how it go down. I just want to say this. Look, this the lineup, though. Look, check this lineup. Check this lineup. Khalid Muhammad, Khalid Abdul Muhammad on the 13th. Me on the 14th. Dr. Martin Luther King on the 15th. Muhammad Ali on the 17th. I'm just saying. That lineup live. That's a live lineup. That's all I'm
saying.
It'd
be better if you had somebody on the 16th.
Say that one more time. I want to make sure I understand the hate.
that was funny as shit. I'ma use that. I'ma use the hell out of that. Hell yeah, I'ma use that shit.
Hey man. Hey, I just wanna let y'all know, man, January we the greatest, man, but appreciate all the love and everything that's happening. And y'all make sure you all have a safe, prosperous and good. Learn something new about Dr. King. Don't just read them I Have a Dream speech. Dr. King had a whole bunch of speeches, man. Read a new speech. Learn something new about Dr. King.
Hey, this weekend. Up in the Learning Center.
Huh?
So some of his speeches are up in the Learning Center, transcribed with audio.
Also, go to swagher.net. I have a breakdown of Dr. King's Where Do We Go From Here speech, video of that. So go to swagher.net to check that out. Also, go to my On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, youtube.com/On the Shoulders of Giants. Check out the video of me breaking down Dr. King's Where Do We Go From Here speech. So that's happening. What's your part of the shot, Pat?
Power to the people.
Amen. That's my part. So now I was gonna give you the poodle tank. Hey, look here. Start with Ben and make you without. Right. Peace out.
That's up, Thomas.
Yep.